We're undoubtedly living in tough times. War and climate change sit alongside economic and labour concerns closer to home. There's a cliche that tough times call for tough leaders. But in a post-pandemic world, are the old rules of what it means to be a tough leader being rewritten? What do CEOs and other leaders need to do to instill confidence, inspire their people, and effect change? I'm Georgie Frost, and this is The So What from BCG.
People popularize head, heart, and hand of leadership. And for many years, we celebrated the head part. Do you have great strategy? Do you have great vision? And the hand, did you get it done? I'm sure there were leaders who also put the heart in the center there and used it. They just didn't get to celebrate it as much. I think today, people are looking for that combination of all three.
Today, I'm talking to Joe Davis, former chair for BCG North America and author of The Generous Leader, 7 Ways to Give of Yourself for Everyone's Gain.
I do believe that now is a time for a generous leader. And a generous leader is actually somebody who gives of themselves without expectation of personal benefit so others can grow, develop, and thrive to their full potential. I think, of course, a leader has to worry about all the stakeholders, the shareholders, the investors, the customers and clients, because if you aren't worried about them, you're not going to have any revenue generated for the shareholders. The employees and, you know, your people, very critical because they're the one helping you deliver, and the community at large, I still argue. But you know, if you're going to think about all those groups in arguably challenging times, which we have so many of them all at once, yeah, you've got to be tough. You have to make decisions and you can't afford to be indecisive. If you think you're wrong, if you discover you're wrong, you change it. You got to stand up for all those stakeholders. You know, you do have to be empathetic. This is something that so many leaders say, and the young people say, is being demanded of, you know, people today. I was talking to Fran Katsoudis, who's the Executive Vice President and Chief People Policy and Purpose Officer at Cisco, the tech company in Silicon Valley. And she told a story from her earlier leadership days or business days. She goes, you know, she said a leader pulled her aside and said, Fran, you don't have enough killer instinct. I'm telling you, do not care so much. You'll do well to put some of that away. And she said to me, she goes, I didn't follow that advice because it wasn't authentic to me. She said, now, interestingly, it didn't work out so well for that leader either. And she doesn't believe it works out at all for today's leaders. So she said, you know, I will make tough decisions. She said, I will engage in very intense issues. I will push people to move hard, but I will always strive to do it with respect and caring. So I don't know Fran personally deeply, but I bet you she's a combination of a generous leader and, you know, a tough, quote unquote, leader.
Is this a question of your two types of leader, or is this just a redefinition of the concept of tough?
I think it's not two types of leader. I don't think that'll work. I think it's redefinition of tough. I mean, people have popularized head, heart, and hand of leadership. And for many years, we celebrated the head part. Do you have great strategy? Do you have great vision? And the hand, did you get it done with your teams? I'm sure there were leaders who also put the heart in the center there and used it. They just didn't get to celebrate it as much. I think today people are looking for that combination of all three. And, you know, there's toughness in there and there's caring or generosity in there.
I think what you're saying is absolutely right. I think the concept of what it means to be tough nowadays is different. And I'm wondering, in all your experience, leaders are just reflecting almost societal expectations. And I think particularly when it comes to men, the idea of, you know, in the olden days, a tough leader is one that sucks it up, isn't vulnerable. And actually, we require much more of everybody and our leaders. So it's a societal reflection, perhaps.
Yeah. Oh, I think so. You know, yeah, you know, you could say easily that the millennials or the Gen Zers are defining this change, but maybe they are. But I think, you know, people who work in organizations, you know, the days, no offense to the white shirt and the blue suit and everyone wore the same, the blue tie, I guess, you know, and you're just a cog in the organization wheel. Those days just don't work anymore. You know, people really want to be seen as a human and as someone who's contributing meaningfully to the organization, not just a cog in the wheel. And if they expect that, then all of a sudden you can have a tough leader who makes tough calls because you need to. They want that too. They don't want a wish. they're going to looking for the leader to live some of the values that you just mentioned.
That seems a lot on leaders, the expectations now. In your book, you ask the question right at the start, why me? As in, why are you writing this book? What do you have to offer to someone reading a book about generous leaders? Why were you writing about it? Why were you writing about it now? And what did you learn?
That's a tough question, actually. So, you know, why did I write it? I wrote it for several reasons. One, as coming out of COVID and the leadership of North America at that time, and a number of colleagues are pushing me hard, said, you should write about your experience there, that experience leading, etc. I created, when I was 15 years old, a list of life's goals. It was actually an interesting list by itself. On there was get something published. I left it vague like that because I published an article, so therefore I qualified it. But I thought, okay. And I'd lost that list for like 40 years. I found that. I said, oh, this is interesting. Okay.
How many did you do?
It sounds arrogant, but they're all checked. They're all checked.
Nice.
Actually, Georgie,
well,
I said to a coach of mine, what am I going to do now?
Right,
the
new
person
list.
Said, make another list. I said, oh, of course, I didn't think of that. I thought I was done. Then the other thing, though, is across, whether it be Procter & Gamble in my early days. Actually, I used to be a restaurant manager and all of, through BCG. And, you know, I admit it's consultants who work hard, but they're also consultants and talented young people who are very demanding. At least in North America, believe it or not, 69% of the staff when I ran North America were under 29 years old. So talking about having to connect with that generation. You know, so I think there is a number of experiences there worth telling a story about. The experience was interesting. I mean, I had a coach. She'd say, okay, well, why did you do that? I said, I don't know. That's what I do. So you can't write a book and say, that's what I do. So you have to look into yourself, Joe, and what did you learn over the years? Why'd you do that? Why were you afraid to do it? What were the challenges? Which was an incredible experience, just to pull it out of my own head, of course. And hopefully, you know, we'll see when people read the book, hopefully it does help some people expand their leadership beyond just the strategy, vision, which is not just, they're very critical, setting metrics and all that, and actually bringing, you know, generous leadership or the heart into the picture also.
So much of what you've done sounds intuitive, instinctive. If it's so innate, how can you write it down into a way that we can learn from it? Was it experience that taught you that? Because the way you describe a leader nowadays, sort of a lot of it comes down to, well, personality. And can you teach that?
So I think you can, all of us can find these places of this type of leadership, whatever it might be, and say, okay, how do I develop, flesh those out more? You know, one of the things I mentioned is really be a generous listener, or really listen to learn. Hear people from another's perspective, understand where they're coming from, you know, and strive to learn what they know that you don't know. Every single CEO said that was critical, that I interviewed said that was critical, and they all like to ask questions. We can all believe for many years, I've got the analysis, I've been there before, I know it. But actually, there's other people that might know something you don't know. So I think, you know, you say, how can I write it down? I mean, I had to explore, how did I develop that? But I think if you realize, okay, I really got to make sure I listen to learn, you can start that at 28 or 30 or 32 or 24. And or as a CEO who probably is doing it pretty well, but maybe you want to spend even more time speaking with a broader set of organization to understand really where they stand.
Don't stay in your own head. Explain a little bit more about how that's possible, because we all have a perspective and a bias. How do you make sure that you don't do that and you constantly listen? Asking is better than telling.
Yeah, I guess you just can't be arrogant for starters and believe you have all the answers. But I'll tell you, I had a mentor at BCG. He's always pushed me and all of us, engage the skeptics. Uncover the no's. And if you believe people that say no are saying it just because they want to cause trouble and get in the way, well, okay, then you're in trouble. But the fact is, most people are saying no because there's something they know about why whatever it is can't get done that you don't know. The minute you know that, you can go solve it with them or solve it with, you know, but you can go solve it. You know, if you really want to get to the best answer, you know, have a few mistakes. Maybe that's what it is, Georgie. And when you make that mistake, you say, oh, gosh. Next time, I better be asking more questions.
Do you learn more from the mistakes or the successes, Joe?
The mistakes. The mistakes or the direct and sometimes painful but very clear feedback, I would say.
Feedback's absolutely essential, isn't it? But how do you foster an environment, especially as a leader, where people who are in positions beneath you feel confident that they can say something, or even positions that alongside you?
I think one thing you can do, but is, you know, putting mechanisms in place to create peer feedback, upward feedback, and all that. That you could do it, you know, at the corporate level or whatever it might be. But I think more importantly is actually to role model collecting feedback. You know, if you finish a presentation or a meeting with a group of people, with the clients or whatever, you know, when you walk out of the room, ask the team, okay, how did we do? How did I do? Now, of course, probably no one's going to tell you, but even the fact that you ask, and then critique yourself a bit. But the fact that you ask at least sends a signal. So I do think it's the same thing. Is if you role model asking for support and feedback, you're going to open it up.
You mentioned authenticity. What does it mean to be authentic as a leader?
Well, you know, I think it means bringing you, the you, to everything you do. And, you know, it used to be, you know, you left the personal side of you at home and you only had the work side of you at work. And your comment at the very beginning about what expectations are of, you know, all those that we work with, people are looking for the whole, you know, the whole person to be there, someone to, you know, engage with them, understand where somebody else is coming from, share a little bit of their own vulnerabilities. I think vulnerability is important to becoming authentic too. You don't have to tell every problem you have, but, you know, in the work environment, I had a good friend who told me a story. I said, well, how did you think about being more vulnerable? And he said, well, it was very difficult for me. He said, actually, I would never admit I didn't know something. And he said, if I was with a team working on something and I could tell they were stuck and they were gonna ask me what I thought, I might walk out of the room before I have to get faced with saying, I don't know, which is, you know, talk about a waste of time. But the person was quite afraid. And he said, one time I just said, what the heck? And he said, I don't know either. And it was amazing. He said, the whole room was like, oh, you don't know? Oh, well, since none of us know, let's really talk about what it might. It's just like a breath of fresh air went through. Everyone got energized because everyone's afraid to show too much they didn't know. So I think authenticity also means sharing some of your own vulnerabilities, which can be as simple as, I'm sorry, I don't get it either. Let's all work on it together.
When did that particular penny drop for you, Joe?
Well, that one's a personal story. I have three quick personal stories. One was my wedding. I couldn't get through my vows. I cried through my entire vows. My wife was clear and strong, and the minister had to say like six words, and I'd repeat them, then six words, and I'd repeat them, choking the entire time. I was 23 years old. I was so embarrassed. After that, I don't know how many people came up to me and said, oh my gosh, that was so wonderful. So much love in the room. So thankful you were, you know, willing to be yourself. Well, here I was, 23-year-old male, thinking I blew it, and yet I got all this feedback. You know, that was a real opener for me. I didn't think about it then, but as I think over the years, but then another experience, my mom died when I was 30, and my two brothers and I were going to say, you know, speak at the service. Well, guess what? This time I sobbed. I could not get anything out. And in that case, the priest at the service said, Joe, tears are the fountains of love. So it was, you know, I had an experience, which obviously, again, similar to 10 years earlier, was a very powerful signal to me that, you know, being willing to let your vulnerabilities, yourself show, you may think, oh my God, this is going to hurt, this will be bad, I'll look like whatever. It didn't, you know, I had early signals. Then I'll tell you a business one. I was speaking at the ELC, which is the elite set of black CEOs and leaders, and I was asked to come and talk about my journey focused on DE&I and these issues. Well, I was nervous, and this was only like 7-10 years ago. I was nervous. I had paper, and I dropped my papers all over the floor. and I picked up the papers. They were a mess. I made it through. But I tell you, once that happened, I kind of stopped and was myself, you know. And then, again, believe it or not, all these people came, geez, Joe, that was so great. And just to see your authenticity and your vulnerability, it just means so much to us. 30 years later, it was still reinforced. I made a mistake that most people would be embarrassed as heck out. And actually, the feedback was a thank you for being yourself and being real.
For some people listening, moved by your stories, Cho, but they would think, I just couldn't do that. You know, to even say, I don't know. I'm frightened by what's going on. I'm worried about, you know, the business or my personal life. You know, this doesn't come that easily to a lot of people, particularly in a work context where, as you mentioned earlier, we've been encouraged not to bring our personal lives into the office.
Yeah, although I think whether it's the pandemic or time, but that's starting to shift because our personal lives became the office, right?
I hear you. I guess say a couple of things. I think it's so powerful if you can share some vulnerabilities because it enables your teams to share a few. And if they're stuck, they're not afraid to figure out how to get unstuck. So I think it's important to try to find your moments.
If you remember Arne Sorenson, the CEO of Marriott, that video of him when he was also, you know, they had to let their staff go. And of course, he was fighting cancer at the time. So he got on that video with his no hair from chemo. And it was very powerful. Christina Sistrunk, who was CEO of an energy company, said to me, I just always would watch others who might be a little more honest or say something, watch how they did it. I can't do what they did, but how did they get through it? And what was the reaction? And that helped her to say, okay, I'm going to try to be more open and authentic with people, which is even arguably even trickier if you're a woman and she was in the oil industry.
Yeah, right. Your reaction said it all. I don't say anything more. Your reaction said it.
But you mean you mentioned a lot about your mentor and how important is it to have a mentor, but also who else did you look up to? You said you look at leaders that, you know, inspire you. Who inspired you?
Well, so this mentor, he was my mentor for 30 years or 25 years, was very inspirational. He was very tough, but, you know, he cared. I could tell he cared about my development. So the tough comments were only to help me to get better. So he inspired me. Now, you know, I get personal a lot. I will tell you two other people. My father-in-law was the president of Northwest Paper and then a senior executive at Potlatch Paper. He was so in tune. And this, you know, he's passed away now. So he was in those roles 25 years ago and then 30 years before that. So definitely in the other time. He was so in tune with the teams, the people. He's one of these that would know everybody in the shop floor's name, everyone that just worked wherever in the office, say hello, ask a question about them. And of course, I didn't see that in the office, but I saw that translating the stories he told and how he lived. That was very inspirational for me, just observing that. And then I got to tell you, since you asked, my wife. My wife is one of those who only cares about other people. Matter of fact, sometimes we say you need to care about yourself a little bit more. She really spends the time to think about, remember what others tell her, where are they coming from? It's all instinct for her. I mean, it's probably innate even. I'm still married 43 years ago, later. That has been very powerful for me.
Finally, we mentioned at the start about tough times. I imagine through your career, you've seen some really tough times. I mean, I don't know if it's been financial crisis, then followed by a pandemic, followed by war, etc. But, you know, there have been tough times over the decades. And, you know, how do you get through it as a leader?
Well, first off,
and not just get through it, how do you get your company to succeed? That we're not just trying to exist here.
Right, right. I think first off, as a leader, I'm going to repeat some themes here, but you have to be at least confident enough in yourself and in the organization, which then means you have to be confident enough or vulnerable enough to know I need to engage multiple people at multiple levels to help us get through this. I think also if there's tough times, and I've learned later on, being honest and open with everybody, you know, the challenges the company's facing, engaging people to team with you to solve those. I think that's how you get through these. But it does have to start. I mean, we talk about vulnerability is important. You also have to have, let me be clear, a level of confidence. You know, we said tough leaders make decisions. I think the best make decisions that are thoughtful, but they make them as quickly as required. They don't be indecisive. And then if they discover they're wrong, they can change the decision, which again requires some humbleness. So it's confidence and humbleness will help you get through and engaging more than yourself.
and a loving spouse.
Yes, well, that helps a lot. And actually, my kids love me too.
Joe, thank you so much. And to you for listening, we'd love to know your thoughts. To get in contact, leave us a message at thesowhat@bcg.com. And if you like this podcast, why not hit subscribe and leave a rating wherever you found us? It helps other people find us too.